There's something that businesses need to do that many of us don't do for ourselves, and yet it would be very valuable to do. I was reading some statistics, and it says when new businesses start up, there's critical times. Those times would be many of the businesses that start up never make it past the first year. And if they make it past the first year, over half of them don't make it to 3 years. And those that do make it to 3 years, really a number of them don't make it to 5 years. Because the whole issue in business is, what's my bottom line? What's my profit? Of all of the energy that I'm giving to it, is it giving me a return that makes the effort worthwhile? Or more importantly, that enables me to cover my overhead. Now, how about in your life? You each and every day are investing yourself into activities, things that you do. Have you ever really sat and thought about, well, what have you gained? What's really your profit? What's your bottom line in everything that you do? Now, for so many of us, we'll sit there and say, well, I have a level of comfort. I'm doing these things because they tend to make me happy. I feel satisfied in them. But it doesn't last. You have to do it all over again. Otherwise, the results are gone. The satisfaction is diminished. The pleasure needs to be replaced by something better. And so the real question for every one of us, as we go through the routines of each and every day, what's my profit? What's my gain? What am I really getting out of it? And that's what Solomon wants us to think about as we begin our study in the book of Ecclesiastes. Now I want you to follow with me as we read the first 8 verses of Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and begin to address some of these important questions. It is the words of the preacher is what's translated in my Bible. It's the words of Koheleth, as we have seen before. It's a Hebrew word which means the teacher. It really means one who speaks to an assembly. And so this is the keynote speaker. There's a group that's been gathered together, and this individual is providing the lecture or the teaching or the speech for the group to consider. This teacher is the son of David, king in Israel. And here is his proposition. Vanity of vanities, says the teacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage or what profit, what gain does man have in all of his work, which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Also, the sun rises and the sun sets and hastens to its place to rise there again. Blowing toward the south and turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along, and on its circular course the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. In this book, Solomon is writing a book of wisdom, and as we have already seen, it is written in a fashion as a persuasive speech. In other words, it is written in a way to cause us to think, and he is desiring a response to what is being stated. And in particular, as Solomon writes this to stir his audience to action, he deals with that fundamental question that is important for every one of us to consider. What gives meaning and value to life? What are you living for? Where do you find purpose and meaning in your activities? And Solomon is making it very clear that you will never find lasting peace, lasting satisfaction, lasting value in the temporal. And yet, that's what man pursues with all of his energies. I don't have time for the eternal. I don't have time for the spiritual. Because I am so enamored with, so entrenched in the things of the temporal. And so Solomon, in writing this, says, vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Now, we have looked at this term, but the conviction, the proposition that he's coming from is for you and for me to realize that it doesn't matter what we look at in this world. And we recognize that in this world, there are certain things that are relatively good and better than other things. Isn't that right? Some things have higher value than other things do. But Solomon is saying it doesn't matter how good something is, how much relative value you can put on something, vanity of vanities, says the teacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, to remember this word that is translated vanity, which, by the way, is found in this book over 30 times. So I guess he keeps telling us what we ought to understand at the get-go. It is vanity. Is a word that was used with Adam and Eve in the naming of one of their sons, Abel. And the Hebrew word behind Abel is Hevel. And what it means is fleeting, temporary. It means that there's no lasting value in what is there. All is emptiness. Won't provide lasting satisfaction. Now, without looking at how Solomon begins his proof in the introduction to his speech, because as is true in any good message that is presented, he introduces the topic to tell you what he's going to talk about. Then you have the body of the material, which is verses 12 of chapter 1 all the way into chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes. And then he has his conclusion and says, this is what we talked about. And in light of what we've talked about, here's what you're supposed to do. And you remember the conclusion, don't you? Remember your Creator when? In the days of your youth. You don't wait till you're old to get started with what's really relevant and important. It's something that ought to encompass your life from childhood on up. You have to seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. That's what really has significance. And what Solomon starts with is a statement that ought to startle all of us. Because he doesn't just say some things are empty, meaningless, are temporary, have no lasting value, but he says all is vanity. And in fact, to bring it out even more graphically, he says things in this world are the vanity of vanities. In other words, the ultimate emptiness. People that live for the things of this world are never satisfied. Not too long ago, many celebrated Christmas and gifts were given, and I dare say some of the toys that people received less than a month ago are already worn out or broken, or they don't have the appeal and the attraction to them that they had on Christmas morning. And if they still have some kind of an appeal or attractiveness to them, boy, when birthdays come, there's something new that that child will want to have to make them happy. When we think of Christmas again, we need to have some kind of new gift to keep us just tooling along and smiling. Why? What you got last year isn't good enough. What you had when you were 2 years old, you don't want to play with that anymore. Now, we speak of it in reference to children, but as adults, we're not any different. We still think we need something to make us happy. All the advertisements that are given with commercials we watch keep telling us what we're entitled to and what we need to have, and this is where we'll be happy. And Solomon says, Wait a minute, don't get sucked into all of that. The vanity of vanities are the things of this world. It is a Hebrewism. When he says vanity of vanities, he puts the two words together in a way of saying this is the ultimate emptiness or meaninglessness of purpose and life. If you are an individual that thinks you are going to find meaning, purpose, and satisfaction in the things of this world, you are going to be greatly disappointed. Because the temporal never gives the individual meaning, purpose, and satisfaction. Even when you're enjoying something in life and you utter those ridiculous words that say, it just doesn't get any better than this. Emptiness. So now he asks a rhetorical question. And he looks at his proposition in verses 3 and 4. What advantage, that is, what gain, what profit, what's left over, what has lasting value to a man in all of his work which he does under the sun? In other words, in all of the activities that a human being can pursue in this world, what really remains and has permanency to it? The reality is, temporal things are always temporal. No matter how well they function, they have to be repaired or they have to be replaced. No matter how hard you worked last week, guess what you're going to do tomorrow? You're going to punch the clock again on Monday morning. No matter how much you learned in school last week, guess what's going to happen Monday morning? You're going to be back in class again. And you're going to be impressed maybe with something you've learned. And you think, boy, my parents should have known that. And the reality is they learned it before too, but they probably forgot it by now. I still thankfully remember that 2 + 2 = 4. But when some of the young people talk about the classes they're taking in calculus, I remember taking those classes. But I want to tell you, I don't know that I can work all of my integral calculus, differential calculus. I don't know that I remember all the theorems that are found in geometry and in other higher math subjects. But you're not learning anything new. You're going to have to learn it. It's how you get into the next level. But everybody's going to go through that same process, and what you learned yesterday won't be carrying over, so you don't have to learn anything today. What advantage, what lasting value do you have in all your labors under the sun? Do you ever think about your job? What do you do with your job? You do the same routine basically day after day after day after day. If you're an attorney, it might be a different case, but you go through the same procedure. What has lasting value? If you're a physician, guess what? People are going to get sick all over again. There's relative good and value in what's done, but what has lasting, permanent results? You keep giving yourself to all of these things that don't provide true profit or gain. It's why when Paul wrote about living life, he says, you know, there's a lot of things that people can look at me and say, you know, Paul, you've made it. You've got all that's necessary. He says, I count that by loss because there's something far more important. And what's really more important is to have a relationship with God, to know Him and to walk with Him. And the reality is, that's true gain. That's an investment that has eternal significance. That's why he moves on and he says, when you start considering it, a generation goes and a generation comes. We talked a little bit about this in our earlier hour of study. Everyone here can remember what it was like or what happened to them when they were younger. And now they look in the mirror and they see an old man, I better not say old woman, but an older woman. But I know I look in the mirror, I see an older man. Not the guy that married his young bride 45 years ago. kids go so fast. And that new generation is doing the same activities that what I used to do. And I look at when I was that age and what older people did, and now I'm the older person doing. Generation comes, generation goes. You know, part of the problem is the fact that as human beings, things keep changing. It's always transitory. It doesn't last. It's not permanent. And you know why that is? Because we're under the curse. That's not the way it's supposed to be. Wouldn't it be nice to go walk around with Methuselah? Why is Methuselah not here? Why is Abraham not here? Why are your grandparents or great-grandparents not here? Because from dust you were taken, to dust you shall return. And the futility of human life in this world is based on the fact that we grow old and we die because we're under the curse. And we can wish that we could see great, great, great grandchildren down to the fourth and fifth generation. It's not going to happen. The reality is your life is over like that. It's just a vapor. And that's what Solomon is trying to cause us to wake up and understand. It goes so fast. And no matter what temporal thing we give ourselves to, it has no eternal permanent value. Lord's sending us rain today. What a blessing to have the rain. You know what that means? Grass is going to grow. Weeds are going to grow. Shrubs are going to need to be trimmed. Doesn't matter if you trimmed them a month ago. You're going to have to do it all over again. Temporal things are always temporal. And no matter how well you do the job, you're going to still have to do it all over again. That's his point. But in contrast, he says, the earth remains forever. This is the way it's translated in mine. My version, basically, he's not saying there is an eternal existence to matter. He's not saying matter is eternal. What he's saying is the same ground you're walking on, Bonnie and Clyde walked on. The same areas you drive around on, the cattle drives took place up the Chisholm Trail. The same things that you look at in the earth, Davy Crockett, when he came and ended up going down to the Alamo, saw in Texas. The earth goes into the ages. It isn't transitory like generation after generation. One of the things that was so marvelous to do when we were over in Europe was to go to some of these castles that were from 1000 AD and to see these buildings and these structures and to know that I'm walking on the same steps that people, you know, 1000 years ago were involved in. You go into Egypt and places like that, you're looking at things that go back 2,000-3,000 years ago. The reality is the earth continues to stand, but generations just pass by again and again and again. Solomon is saying, what are you investing in? Do you understand that all of your temporal activities, many of which are necessary, are always temporal and do not have lasting value? And ultimately, in this book, he'll tell you that the only thing that really matters is whether or not you have a genuine relationship with the Lord. Because you will take out of this world just as much of the temporal in the way of possessions as you brought into this world. Absolutely nothing. So, the earth continues to stand. Now let me give you some proof of what it is that I'm saying. He says, here's some proofs. The sun rises and the sun sets. Now Solomon is writing this from a phenomenological aspect. In other words, sometimes people say, well, look at how unscientific the Bible is. And yet you see great scientists who say, did you see the sunrise this morning? It's phenomenological. We know the earth turns. It's the rotation that causes the movement of the sun. But the reality is, from our standpoint under the sun on this earth, we see a sunrise and it's going to end up with a sunset. Does it have permanent lasting results? Guess what? No matter how much heat and how much light the sun gives to us today, what is it we're going to need tomorrow? A sunrise with the sun passing through its circuit and a sunset. Will that be the completion then? No. Ever since God said, let's create a greater light in the heavens to rule the day and a lesser light to rule the night, day after day after day, the sun has been performing its same repetitive, monotonous work, and it has no permanent result. It's going to continue tomorrow the same way. Otherwise, we become the frozen planet. Isn't that right? And the point Solomon is making, that when you consider the things of this world, all of the activities that are being done may have some temporal good and temporal benefit, but no permanent results or profit. It never comes to its completion. It is always a work that needs to be done. It's kind of the same truth that comes out in Psalm 19, where it says this, that the sun comes out as out of its chamber, and it's like the strong man to run its course. And literally it says that as the sun rises and the sun sets, my translation, it hastens. It's the word, it's panting, it's out of breath. It's running to do that same circuit all over again. And for the thousands upon thousands of years of this solar system's existence, there has been this repeated activity on the part of the sun. Then you'll notice how Solomon understood certain scientific things when he talks about the wind. You know what he understood? Low pressure, high pressure. The wind makes its circle. It's spinning around the low or it's spinning around the high. And so he says, the wind, it's on its circular course. It blows toward the south and then it turns again towards the north. And so what do we find when we watch the weather? And we turn to the weather channel and they're going to talk about the low pressure coming in from the west and it's moving across the country. And it's going to pull up moisture from the Gulf or it's going to bring the cold down from the north. We have an Arctic blast. And man, when we get into trouble is when the high and the low meet. And we ended up with the Arctic front combined with all of the precept coming out of the south. And so we have frozen weather patterns. Guess what's going to happen tomorrow? The cyclic nature of the wind patterns. They may move across the nation, but you're going to find new ones forming in the Pacific. You're going to see new ones coming out of Canada. You're not going to say, well, we won't have any more weather patterns. It's done. They're going to just keep continuing. It's the monotony of the temporal with the same activity going on again and again and again. Do we need the weather patterns? We need them just as much as we need the sun. But the point Solomon is making is all of the activity of those things in nature have no permanent results. So why are you so foolish putting all of your eggs in your temporal basket and thinking you're living for the here and now and you're going to have permanent lasting results? Boy, Niagara Falls is something spectacular to see. The amount of water going over that cliff. Or you think of the mighty Mississippi meandering down to the Gulf. You think of the great Amazon River flowing into the Atlantic. Victoria Falls in Africa. Doesn't matter how much water goes over the edge of the Niagara. Doesn't matter how many gallons move down the Mississippi River. The sea is not full. It's perpetual activity of water flowing. And yet, he says, it returns to where it started. I mean, it's that water cycle. And so instead of the sea being full, that's now encompassed the land, God's the one that put the boundary there, it'll go no further. It is a lot of energy and activity that is being expended, isn't it? I mean, we can see water carving canyons out in the west. We can establish great projects with the dams to harness the energy that's in the water. And yet, as it continues that perpetual motion, the point is it has no lasting result. And so it evaporates, and then it condenses, it comes down as rain, and guess what's going to happen? It's going to flow down the river all over again. It's been happening for thousands upon thousands of years. Perpetual activity with no permanent results. Now, part of that is the fact that, as it says concerning the things in nature, is God subject nature to futility as well? Read Romans chapter 8 at your leisure. And nature is groaning for deliverance from this perpetual vanity of all that is taking place with no permanent results, because it is under the rule of man and therefore was placed under the curse along with the judgment that God gave to man. So what does he say in verse 8? All things are wearisome. You're never tired, are you? You're never worn out. See, my wife gave me one of the greatest compliments of all this morning. She says, "You got bags under your bags." Where do they come from? I'm weary. I'm tired. And I get to do the same thing all over again. That's the point. Go with me back to the book of Psalms, if you would. Psalm 90, oldest song in our Bibles, written by Moses. In Psalm 90, verse 10. As for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due to strength, 80 years. Now, Moses is basing this off of two important things. One, Israel's in the wilderness, and that generation is going to die. And those that came out of Egypt within 40 years, they may have been 40 years of age when they started, are going to be dead. But the other is the recognition of human lifespan. With all of our medical advances, with all of our technology, guess what the life expectancy of human beings is? Men must be wearier than women because we tend to die earlier. But you're still only getting into the early 70s. Life expectancy in a country like this, with all the great medical care and the provisions that we have, here's, we'll just round off, 1450 BC, here is Moses saying, guess how long human beings live? 70 to 80 years. Now, don't rest your laurels on that. I want you to go to the cemetery and look around, and you're going to find there's a lot of headstones that have people that died a lot younger than 70 years. The only thing we know we have is now. There's newborn infants in the cemetery. There's people 5 and 6 years old that are buried. There's people who died in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. You know, the big thing on the news with the world of sports was an individual dying of cancer who struggled with it for 7 years. Didn't even get to see his 50th birthday. Got no guarantees. But he's saying when you look at the average, when you look at how things are, human beings live 70 years, maybe up to 80 years. Obviously some longer, some a lot less. That's why you have this is the average. And what is characteristic of human existence? Notice what he says. Yet their pride. What are we going to boast about? What are we bragging about? What are we really talking about? What do we think gives us meaning and purpose? Our jobs. How hard we worked. What accomplishments we've made. And so Moses says, their pride is but labor and sorrow, and it's soon gone, and we fly away. Have my physical therapy practice, and when it's not operating anymore, it's never going to be missed. There might be a few people we took care of and said, well, we appreciated the kind of care we got there, but there's other therapy practices. There'll be other therapy practices 10 years from now. Doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, it doesn't matter, right? The reality is, a generation comes and a generation goes, and what life is like is monotony of doing the same thing again and again and again, and getting all worn out and tired. And what we want to talk to one another about is, look how hard we work. Look at how much we've succeeded. Look at what we've gained in the temporal. Oh, how tired I am because of all I've had to do. Human life is wearisome and toil and filled with sorrow. Isn't it sad that even those that know better, because of their Christian understanding and relationship with the Lord, so often live for the tyranny of the urgent instead of for what's really important and provides true profit or gain? What are you working for? Where are you looking to find your meaning? Some of you are fairly new Christians. Some of you have been at this for many, many years. And the real question is, with all of your endeavors in this life, what do you have of lasting value? Where's your profit? It's only that which has to do with the eternal, with the spiritual, with Christ, that really has significance. Activity in and of itself doesn't produce any permanent results. No matter how sincere, how diligent, how energetic, all activity has no lasting value unless it is done in the name of Christ. Let's pray.